WBEZ is supported by Rivian. Off-road electric Joyride ride-alongs are available in downtown Chicago in a Rivian truck or SUV from September 19th to the 21st at the corner of East Illinois and North Michigan. Plus, a chance to win a two-night stay at a luxury Chicago hotel. Terms apply. No purchase necessary. Entry period is September 12th through the 21st. Must be 21 to enter. Odds of winning depend on number of entries. Visit Rivian.com/Chicago Sweepstakes to enter.
America is changing, and so is the world.
But what's happening in America isn't just the cause of global upheaval. It's also a symptom of disruption that's happening everywhere.
I'm Asma Khalid in Washington, D.C.
I'm Tristan Redman in London, and this is The Global Story.
Every weekday, we'll bring you a story from this intersection, where the world and America meet.
Listen on bbc.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's that time again for Chicago residents to become the interviewer and grill the mayor about the issues on their minds. I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. Once a month, Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson joins us as we open our phone lines and let listeners ask pretty much whatever they want. We kicked off our conversation by talking about news from Washington.
If we need to, we're going to do the same thing in Chicago, which is a disaster. We have a mayor there who's totally incompetent. He's an incompetent man.
So he's vowing to deploy National Guard troops here in Chicago. Do the same thing, he says. You've said as early as this week, troops don't even have policing power. So what I'm hearing you say is this is not even possible. Is that right?
It's not. You're exactly right. In fact, you know, this president, of course, continues to just trample and shred our Constitution. Now, he has repeatedly stepped outside of the bounds of the checks and balances that our Constitution permits. And the larger point, though, is here in the city of Chicago, I have taken on community safety as my top priority. From day one, I said that we have to get a handle on community safety by promoting detectives and revamping our detectives division. We have to invest in young people. We have to expand mental health services. We have to ensure that we're building more affordable homes. In order to have a safe and affordable big city, we have to invest in people. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what we've done as a result of those critical investments that we've made. Homicides are down 30%. Shootings and shooting victims are down almost 40%. Robberies are down 35%. And though there's more work to be done, we continue to see the benefit of our work working.
Yeah.
If the president was serious, the $800 million that he ripped away from working people and placed it into the hands of the ultra-rich, those were dollars that were designed to prevent violence. The ultimate goal is to prevent violence. That is the solution to violence, is to prevent it. And this president has demonstrated that he's not sincere in working with mayors across this country, whether it's Brandon Scott, who is seeing unprecedented numbers of reduction in Baltimore,
mm-hmm.
or whether it's, you know, what's happening in Birmingham, Alabama with Mayor Woodfin. You're seeing the results of our investments all over the country, particularly cities that are led by Democrats.
Something else we've seen, though, is Trump do this before, where he might not have the authorization or the legal means to do something, because legal experts have also weighed in on this and said, no, this is uniquely something that belongs to the nation's capital, right? As a federal city rather than part of a state, this is something he can do there, but he can't do it in these other cities that he's name dropped. But we've seen where he still moves forward with these things that we deem aren't legal. So are you going to remain on alert?
We're always on alert. You know, the president is working hard to divide and conquer our nation. And this democracy was built by immigrants and descendants of slaves. And in order for our democracy to be protected for the benefit of working people, it's going to take not just mayors across this country, but people raising their voices, resisting this president.
Yeah.
Anything less than that would be a derelict of duty for all of us. Saving and protecting this democracy should be our top priority, considering the circumstances that we are enduring at this particular moment.
So when you hear accusations like what we heard at the end of that clip there, where he says you're incompetent, right? How do you receive that? Do you just take that critique and turn it into good for the city?
It's not a critique.
Is it a distraction?
It is a distraction. What is this? Sticks and stones, right? You know, which is a great adage, by the way. It's a good throwback to the 80s. Sticks and stones, You know, but look, this is about action. And I take my job seriously. It's why I've worked hard to be the most pro-worker city in America, right? As we abolish the sub-minimum wage for tip workers, we've extended paid time off for workers across this city. Over 1 million workers now have the benefit of being able to make a doctor's appointment or go to the first day of school, which is coming up in a couple of days here in Chicago. We've invested in youth employment. 30,134 young people have had summer jobs this summer. It's a 47% increase since I've taken office. We are on pace to build 10,000 more affordable units. We're building the safest, most affordable big city in America, and it's really bringing everybody together, whether it's the business community, the faith community, the philanthropic community, community-based organizations, labor, all of us building a safe and affordable big city is a benefit for the working people of the city who have longed for those type of critical investments. And that's what's happening.
Texas Democrats were here in Illinois. They were trying to delay efforts that would redraw political maps in Republicans' favor so that they would have a greater majority in the House. Democrats from across the Prairie State showed support. You did as well. Also, though, at a press conference, you expressed frustration that you said that there's not a similar outpouring of support for the needs of the South and West sides of Chicago. You said something to the effect of, like, I wish they would use that same energy. Tell me more about what you were thinking there.
Well, I mean, look, first of all, again, I do support the efforts to ensure that we keep representation across the board for Black and brown folks. I can tell you that firsthand. When schools were being closed and public housing was being shuttered here in Chicago, that was an effort to dilute Black and brown political power, right? As we have seen the push out, if you will, of the removal of working people, but especially on the west and south sides of Chicago, it's been a precipitous decline over the course of decades. So certainly I recognize the value of having representation that reflects the values of all of our communities. And it's important in this moment that we pay attention to the national dynamics and the ramifications of what it means to have the type of extremism that is carrying on at the federal level with a local focus. It's a both and. We cannot afford to just simply walk. We have to walk and chew gum, pat our heads, rub our stomach, all of those multiple formations of governance.
Yeah.
And so when we think about what's happening at the federal level, where Donald Trump has declared a war on public education, just the ESSER dollars alone, had those dollars been extended, we would have a $500 million surplus right now. And so it's all interconnected. We do need to have the same energy. That's the approach that I've taken. We have taken positions in this city under my leadership on national crises, international crises, and I've even taken criticism for that, while at the same time building affordable homes. All I'm simply saying is it's a both and strategy. The west and south sides of Chicago, quite frankly, it's the manifestation of the lack of urgency.
Are you feeling that there's been an improvement, though, in support from Springfield?
Well, I mean, I believe that there's still work to be done, right? We're not where we need to be. And as long as we're not where we need to be, we need to continue to work collaboratively to move the ball down the field. Now look, that same day in which I made that announcement on the front pages of the Chicago Sun-Times, the state of Illinois admitted that they owe the city of Chicago $1.6 billion, right? You could imagine, families are quite perturbed in this moment because you have a president who has used the ICE agents as his own militarized force. There's only two entities that have a larger budget than ICE, and it's the United States of America, the armed forces, and it's China's armed forces, right? And so you have, Black and brown folks and working class people across this country who are losing Medicaid because of this president. They're losing access to food because of this president. Veteran services are being cut because of this president.
Mm-hmm.
It has local impact when the federal government, is absolves itself from its responsibility. And so that's why as a city, I'm building affordable homes. I'm investing in mental health and behavioral health care services. I'm investing in our education system at a tune of over $1 billion just from the city of Chicago to our Chicago public schools. We cannot afford at this moment to point fingers at one another. We have to turn towards one another and work collectively to ensure that we are protecting our democracy while also ensuring that our local communities are not left behind. And that's the leadership that I'm providing in this moment.
All right. Let's pivot now and let's take some of those calls, shall
we? Let's do it.
Yeah, of course. That are waiting to talk with you, Mayor. First up is Chio in Humboldt Park, who's got a question regarding ICE. Mm. Hi, Chio. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. And thank you, Mayor Brendan Johnson. My question is, what active steps are you taking to protect the immigrant community? And what steps can we as the community take to protect our neighbors?
Thank you very much. Appreciate that question. You know, look, I'm going to be on the southwest side of Chicago tonight, where there's going to be a big celebration around many different community investments that we've made. It's because the culmination of summer activity, and just going to continue to put our arms around our immigrant communities. So the first thing is we have to show up with the full force of government. Just our presence alone reassures people that they're not forgotten. The second thing is, you know, I've maintained that we are a welcoming city. In fact, even in front of the congressional hearing where the Trump administration sued me, saying that our welcoming city ordinance was a violation. The courts ruled in our favor and struck that lawsuit down. But it's also, so it's policy, it's the courts, it's showing up in the communities, but it's also ensuring that our institutions, and this gets to the last point of your question, that we know our rights here in Chicago. And so one of the things that we are doing with my deputy mayor of migrant and refugee rights, we are spending time with community-based organizations along with government entities to make sure that we spread the information to our residents what their rights are. And as a community, the more we are aware of our rights, the better we can protect one another. In fact, President Trump's so-called border czar said it himself, that his frustration in Chicago was that the residents were too educated and he was not able to fully execute his plan. Now, look, the fact that we have an entity of government that's wearing masks and disappearing people, that is antithetical to what this democracy is purposed to do. And so whether it's, again, showing up for people, which I'm going to continue to do that, making sure that we are strengthening our policies, but also battling out in the courts. And then, of course, the community coming together, rising up to ensure that the undocumented or immigrant community as a whole doesn't feel isolated, because that's what Trump's motives are, is to isolate people, segregate them out, make them other, and then turn people against them. That's not who we are in the city of Chicago.
Thanks for your question, Chio. Let's head now outside Chicago to the southwest suburbs. This is Natasha in Clarendon Hills. Hi, what's your question for the mayor?
It's our Little League World Series, Clarendon Hills, right?
That's right. Yes, yes. They are actually playing again this Saturday. It's very exciting for us as a town.
Yeah, what's your question for the mayor?
Yes, thank you. I know I'm outside of city limits, Mayor. I do have to say, though, I'm a former Chicagoan. I'm very proud as the former Chicagoan of how you've been handling this on a public stage. I'm also very proud to be an Illinoisan with how Governor Pritzker has been handling everything that's going on federally. My question is this. Me being a small business owner, and I'm on site operating every day, I also have immigrant employees that are spooked and freaked out. What are some of the things that I can do as a business owner without, let's say, putting my business at risk to show support for the community and, you know, do what we can from small level to fight this fascist move here from the federal government?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. In fact, I was just out with some of the striking workers yesterday. Teamsters, Local 705. And this is one of the points of contention within their negotiations, is to for the company to offer up stronger protection for their workers, because there are a number of immigrants and undocumented individuals all over our state. And you're absolutely right. Whether it's the Welcoming City Ordinance or the Illinois Trust Act, Governor Pritzker and the General Assembly, along with the City Council, and myself, have worked hard to ensure that that policy is upheld. I think one of the things I think is incredibly important is that, you know, the neighbors have to know the benefit of our immigrant community to the larger economic prowess of our cities. And the reason why I think that's important is because it's unfortunate that the misinformation that has been so pervasive, where, you know, the president is trying to characterize immigrants as a drain on our economy, when it's the absolute opposite. In fact, you know this as a small business owner, that economic impact. And that tells a story about their character, right? How immigrants from all over the globe for ages have come to the city of Chicago or to the state of Illinois, right? And I think the more we're able to tell that story and also making sure that your employees in the community knows what the law states in the Illinois Trust Act, that provides a deeper understanding of the benefit that immigrants bring to our communities, but also what the law clearly does to protect our immigrant community. So I would encourage you to use that information to disseminate it throughout your workspace as well as the community.
Yeah. Sticking with immigration for just another moment here, Mayor, your office, I know, finished an internal review of the ICE raid that took place on June 4th in the South Loop. Can you share any updates?
We did an internal review, and essentially we wanted to see, based upon how ICE engaged, how do we show up stronger as a city? And essentially what we uncovered was that our police department worked within the parameters of the law, and there are ways in which we can better communicate to community-based organizations and other advocates that when calls are coming through that involves ICE agents, how do we collectively, as a police department, as community advocates, with my administration, offer up support for those who wish to express their First Amendment right. And in these unprecedented times, we're going to have to be far more nimble and innovative in our approach, because I'm not sure like how much was fully discussed about how that operation went down.
Mm-hmm.
There was an entire site in our city, and our police department did not know that this ICE site existed. And it's tactics like that are unprecedented. And look, Our police department, we collaborate with the federal government around a number of issues, getting guns off the street, making sure that, you know, when it's human trafficking is taking place, that we're uncovering, you know, these bad acts. Our local police department, in order to continue to maintain and build community trust, we do not require our police officers to double as federal ICE agents. That's not within our jurisdiction. I believe it's counterproductive, quite frankly, to community safety. And its proof is in the work that we're doing as violence right. continues to come down in the city of Chicago. So the internal review just, you know, challenged us to have more insight and to be more nimble in terms of how we show up in incidents.
Yeah. And what's like next this. Then?
Well, I mean, we're not just sitting around waiting, but what's next is we'll continue to educate the community, right? We're going to continue to make sure that people know their rights. Our welcoming city ordinance has been determined by the courts that we have the authority locally to ensure that our police officers do not engage as federal ICE agents. And then we're going to continue to look at other policy in which we can strengthen our local ordinances to ensure that the immigrant community is fully that they are fully protected.
Right. Let's hear from another caller. Here's Jane in North Center. Hi, Jane. What's your question for the mayor?
Thank you for taking our calls today, Mr. Mayor.
Of course.
My question to you is about the precarious state of both the city and the school district's finances. It seems like you're only talking about raising taxes, taking out additional debt for the city, or hoping for funding from the state that really realistically isn't going to arrive. I'd like you to address why you never seem to focus on spending cuts specifically. Thank you.
Now, thank you for the question. In fact, we have focused on cost savings. In fact, just last year's budget, there was a 3% cut across the board. And we will continue to find more productive ways in which government could be far more sharper so that we're not wasting dollars. In fact, we saved the taxpayers over $200 million just in last year's budget. Part of this challenges and why we're actually having these conversations live is so that the narrative that's being pushed in some instances through the media that only want to tell one part of my story. So I'm going to continue to tell the full part of my story. We have made consistent cuts since I've been in office. But keep in mind, though, that the reason why we are in the financial strain that we're in right now is because administration after administration neglected to pay into our pensions. The drain on our corporate fund is primarily based on the fact that we have pension responsibilities, and I believe in paying into our pension system, but they are woefully underfunded, and they haven't been funded for a very long time. And it's my responsibility in this moment is to fix the, quite frankly, the sins of the past. The other challenge that we do have in our budget, and I believe it's Jane, right?
Yes.
Is that we have a great deal of liability as it relates to police settlements, right? And we're talking about just, you know, the city council meeting in July, where we settled on a police-involved, you know, brutality that took place in 1985.
Yeah, you've been making a lot of big payouts.
A lot of big payouts from moments that happened when I was either in elementary school or barely getting into high school. Now, we are moving forward with constitutional policing, and my superintendent that I selected, Superintendent Snelling, is doing an incredible job to make sure that we're training police officers so that we don't continue to find ourselves in this predicament. So, and the last thing that I'll say, Jane, is I put together a working group of business leaders, labor leaders, philanthropic leaders, legislators to provide me with recommendations that will help strengthen the city of Chicago moving into 21st century government.
Yeah.
Right. And so it's not just, but the last thing that I'll say is, though, is we are making incredible strides in terms of our investments. We don't want to lose those investments. Right. And it's something that I believe that we have to continue to say in a way that's quite emphatic. If you want the safest, most affordable big city in America, we should invest. And those investments are paying off. I mean, our airports, just June, unprecedented numbers. We've had more people come through our airports than ever in the history of Chicago.
Right.
Hotel occupancy continues to go. The revenue streams that I control are performing 5% better than what we projected. In fact, we're the only government in the country where in most instances where development and revenue has flattened, which people would at least want that, we're actually performing better than most economies across the country because we've been very shrewd and strategic about cost savings, making critical investments, while also building up the infrastructure that allows for 21st century government to take place.
Yeah, but there's still a lot of work to be done. As I mentioned earlier, you talked about the fact that we are at an economic point of no return. So we're going to talk more budget and more finance stuff. It's a $1.1 billion budget gap. Tell me what you mean by that when you say those terms.
Well, when I ran for office, I was the only candidate who projected these budget deficits, right? I projected, because you can project them 3 to 4 or 5 years out, right? Just based upon how the market is moving, we can make relatively great estimates. And we've been pretty accurate, right? And, you know, I believe to Jane's point of the question about like how I approach this situation. So we don't have a spending problem, despite the fact that I believe that's how it's characterized. In fact, government has gotten smaller. Particularly the last couple of years. I just wanted to make sure that I made that point.
Yeah, her initial
stronger.
Question was about why you don't focus on spending cuts.
Which we do. And like I said, we have saved taxpayers over $200 million just in last year's budget alone. And we're going to continue to find those savings as well as make, you know, difficult cuts where we can, you know. And so we can project based upon our pensions and the responsibilities that we have there, mm-hmm. along with labor costs, right? And so as labor costs continue to go up, people want police officers, people want firefighters. I settled the firefighters contract just this week, and we want to make sure that those workers are well compensated. These are individuals who are putting their lives on the line. 40%, I believe roughly, of our overall corporate funding is dedicated to public safety, right? So, you know, when we start talking about cost savings, you know, I have to be very strategic because we do not want to go backwards in terms of where we're headed as a safe and a more affordable city. And the truth of the matter is the state of Illinois, with measures that they have taken, have reduced dollars for municipalities, including Chicago. So if you look at the LGDF, the Local Government Distributive Fund, there's $295 million less based upon the configuration and calculation the state of Illinois made to put more dollars in their line, mm-hmm. right? If you look at the personal property replacement tax, we've lost almost $100 million there. Again, these are things that these are decisions that are being made that are impacting local government. So I've worked very hard to make sure that we are paying into our pension system, that we're responding to these, you know, unfortunate payouts because of, you know, instances of police brutality that date back to the 80s.
Right.
So what I've said, in order for us to grow our economy, it's why we're investing in youth employment. It's why we're investing in development. We have, you know, a big development that has been proposed for a new stadium for Chicago Fire.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at Lincoln Yards North, there's a development there with 1,200, I believe, more units. So we're building more housing. The best way to grow our economy is to make sure that we are increasing our tax base. So it's both and, right?
Yeah.
It's finding revenue streams to make the critical investments while also modernizing government so that we can have savings,
yeah.
which I've worked diligently to do.
I'm glad you mentioned that development for the Chicago Fire earlier, or I think it was last week, rather, on this program. We talked with some community members from Chinatown. They've got concerns, as you might be aware, just around just building this stadium around that 78 site. And they're concerned. Their concerns are real. It's about gentrification, displacement, right? Not having a say at all. What's your role as mayor in that situation to make sure that Chicagoans are being heard when it comes to development that's in and around their neighborhood?
Well, working with the local alders to continue to have conversations, to hear those concerns from the community. I just had an exchange with Alderwoman Dow, who is leading many of these community meetings, and we're going to continue to do that. I get the concern. It's why I'm building more affordable units, right? Because development cannot come at the expense of working class people. So I want to continue to hear feedback.
Okay.
Creating jobs, construction jobs, creating, you know, more opportunities for us to generate revenue so that we can continue to build on our effort to build the safest, most affordable big city in America. The investments that we're making, they're working, you all. Violent crime continues to go down in Chicago. A lot of work to be done, but we are headed in the right direction, and we should not veer off from the positive gains that we've made and being strategic and responsible at the same time. That's really how I was raised as a middle child, growing up in a working class family. It's not like our ends met every single day. And mm-hmm. so quite frankly, you know, my wife gives me a hard time because, you know, as I get older, I turn more and more into Andrew Leon Johnson. And I can tell you, I still believe he's got some money hidden somewhere. You know, that generation, those baby boomers, they were incredibly prudent. So just know that baby boomer prudency has been passed on to Gen X.
All right.
And that's what I'm representing today. Shout out to the generation that is the last obedient generation on the planet, Gen Xers.
The millennials would like a word. And so would Sean in Chinatown.
Which is my exact point there. The fact that you was ready to be so, the pushback is real from that generation.
I tell it like it is, Mayor. Sean's waiting. He's in Chinatown. Hey, Sean, what's your question for the mayor? Thanks for waiting.
Hello.
Hello.
Thank you for taking the question. So back on that stadium development with the Related Midwest, proposing a Chicago Fire Stadium in 78. So the community does have a lot of concerns like gentrification and traffic congestion. So as a champion of equity and inclusion, would you support or lead a process to develop a community benefits agreement where we could protect housing and surrounding communities and minimize harm as much as possible?
That's a great question, Sean. Hey, look, I believe that development should happen with community. And, you know, I have, you know, said this repeatedly, whether it's on the southeast side with a new development out there with PsiQuantum, we have to have community engagement and involvement here and ensuring that the community can benefit from the development. That is always my North Star. And that's why I said that I know that Alderwoman Dowell and others are going to continue to engage with communities and the community. And as proposals are put forth around how we can protect working people in this city while also having development. That is my top priority.
Yeah. Here's Eugene in Edgewater. Hi, Eugene. Welcome to Reset.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. Go ahead with your question.
So my question is, so from what I'm reading is CPS students, there's 330,000 of them, and 50% are experiencing food insecurity, and 5 to 10% may be experiencing housing insecurity. And is there anything we can do more about that? Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for that question. One of the things, and that's an important note here, you know, the number of students in our public schools that are unhoused is pretty significant. 20,000 or so is the estimated amount. And I know this firsthand as a public school teacher, a former public school teacher, many of my students who were housing insecure. And that's why when we settled this teacher's contract, we wanted to make sure that there were real clear opportunities where the school and the community as a whole could be better connected to city government. And so the approach that we have put forward has been very clear about whether it's public housing or affordable units, putting more units online, right? We are roughly, Eugene, 100,000 units short in our city. We're on pace to build 10,000, but we have to move with more expediency. And that's why in our July City Council meeting, we passed an ordinance that allows for more development to happen around L stops. And we have reduce the amount of parking spaces that are necessary in order to do that because the number of parking spaces that were required, it, you know, was driving rent up and construction costs, you know, 17-20%. And so there's a lot of work to do around that, Eugene. And this is why, you know, I've been very adamant about making sure that the $1.6 billion that the state, their calculation, by the way, this is not my calculation, the state of Illinois admits that it is underfunding our public schools by a tune of $1.6 billion. Eugene, I'm going to need your help and support to work with the General Assembly to ensure that those dollars actually are received by the very students that you're speaking of.
We'll go now to Adekola, who has got a question over in Northbrook. Hey, Adekola.
Yeah. Hi. Hi, Mayor Johnson. First of all, you know, leading a major city is very hard. So I wanted to, first of all, thank you for your service. My wife and I are small investors and building affordable housing on the South Shore of Chicago. And we've been very frustrated that the permitting process takes much longer, appears to be taking much longer than other communities. And we've been now burglarized twice in one of our sites, which is making it very difficult for us to continue our mission of investing in underserved communities. So the question is, what is being done to help investors, particularly underserved communities?
Well, thank you for your question, Odekala, and thank you for investing in the city of Chicago. And we're experiencing more of that those type of investors. In fact, our Missing Middle program is attached to that type of work where local developers and particularly developers of color are able to participate in building owner-occupied housing because we need more of it. We put forth an initiative called the Cut the Tape Initiative, which is something that I've heard as a Cook County commissioner. It's what I heard when I was campaigning, that the process is way too cumbersome. So, Odekala, if you are willing to leave your information, I'll make sure that someone gets back with you today, tomorrow at the latest, but I'll have someone get back with you today or tomorrow at the latest to find out what your situation is so that the hard work that you and your wife have put in and the benefit that that means we get to receive in underserved neighborhoods, that that benefit isn't lost.
Yeah. Thank you so much for your call, Odekala. Over now to Will in Pilsen. Hi, Will. What's your question for the mayor?
Hi there, Mr. Mayor. Will Pilsen, I voted for you, and you know, I definitely have a question about the Granny Flats ordinance, and I'm really interested in that. I know that there's a lot of aldermen, some of them your allies, some of them are not, that are against this. I'd like to know where the process is, and where do you see that realistically passing, if at all, timeline-wise?
Well, thank you for that question, and thank you for your support. This goes back to my earlier point a safe and affordable big city. If people cannot afford to live here, even if we're safe, that doesn't do much for working people. And if people can afford to live here, but they don't feel safe, that also harms us as well. And that's why the combination of investing in people is so critical and crucial in this moment. And, what the last caller was referring to was an opportunity for single family homes where attics and basements can be converted into not just living corridors, but units. And this, we have worked with people who support this measure and people who have concerns. We put forth some guardrails to, make sure that the process doesn't overwhelm blocks in neighborhoods. But I believe this is the right pathway moving forward. As far as the timeline, the hope is to get it passed in September.
Mayor, I think you've got some updates.
Just some quick updates. Odekala reminded me of some callers from last month.
Sure.
And so we had Lewis from the Southwest side was asking about more bike lanes, and we looked into what he was talking about. And so there's construction that's starting this year on two projects in the very area of Archer Avenue between 47th Street and Western Avenue, and Kedzie Avenue between Archer Avenue and 28th Street. We're going to have a number of safety improvements for pedestrians, including concrete protected bike lanes, bus loading islands, and shorter pedestrian crosswalks. Nadia from Rogers Park, what's up? Had a question about smoking on the CTA, and there are a number of issues that,
we're dealing with
on CTA. So we've had some progress in terms of looking. I put forth an executive order, but the city has been doing a really good job of trying to really crack down on this, but. Again, we signed an executive order to make sure that we have more resources to do that. But in particular, we're also looking at social workers, mental health professionals who could potentially go on platforms and begin to work with people who are having mental health crises. We did open up 4 newly renovated Red Line stations. These are fully accessible. They're quieter, faster, more efficient, and this is the future of public transportation. Finally, Phil and Edgewater asked about what we're doing about housing in particular, and I just have 2 quick main updates about our upzoning plans. This is really about building more housing to keep the cost of housing under control. We want to keep developing our neighborhoods without gentrification. This came up in one of the other callers.
Yes.
And so, again, we put forth an ordinance that allowed for us to build easier and more housing near transit. And the construction cost, we're going to be able to save tens of thousands of dollars, but also by reducing the number of parking spots that are required, it could save another 17 to 20% just in the cost of rent. So
awesome.
Those are some other updates, and just keep
them
coming.
Thank you for that.
Of course.
Appreciate you checking in on our folks who called back in July. Now let's go back to the phones. We have Khaled waiting in Lakeview. Hey, Khaled, welcome to Reset.
Yes, good afternoon. This is Khaled. Good afternoon, Mayor Johnson. How are you?
Good afternoon. I'm doing very well. Thank you.
Good, good. I'm glad I voted for you, too. I'm glad you're doing well. I have a quick question. I recently lost my job, and I'm driving my own taxi. I hope I happen to own a medallion. I would request of you to please do whatever's in your power to make it a little easier, because cost of doing business is very high. You know what I mean?
I do.
I just had inspection last week. Yes, sir.
Yeah.
And I had inspection last week. Cost me $2,500 to fix a car.
Yeah.
Please do something about this Uber, Lyft. You know, they're running around like cats and dogs. And please try to stabilize your taxi industry.
Thanks for calling,
yeah,
Khaled.
And thank you for that. And,
sorry
about
that.
That you lost your job. And he's not wrong about the cost to operate a taxi. And he mentioned what I was going to mention. Obviously, this is why we're working with the workers who do participate in rideshare to be able to level the playing field. And I know that there are some folks that are working with labor, as well. So it's not lost on me. This has been a challenge for some time, especially as more rideshare continues to proliferate. So that's something that we do have to level set so that there's equitable distribution of how those workers can participate in our growing economy.
Yeah. Thanks for your call, Khaled. Over to Steve now in Edgewater. Steve, thank you for waiting. Appreciate you calling.
Hi, thanks very much. Hi. Good afternoon, Mr. Mayor. I recognize the need for additional housing, but I am kind of shocked and very curious. I get the thinking, and you covered it a minute ago, about eliminating parking with new construction. I'm in Edgewater. This relates to the upzoning of Broadway. Edgewater is already, if not the densest, one of the densest wards in the city. And there's currently absolutely no street parking. If you came here at night, you would find the crosswalks choked with cars parked in tow zones, and you would find the fire hydrants covered by vehicles. The notion of adding thousands of additional units within a block of the Kenmore-Winthrop corridor is just going to make this neighborhood absolutely chaotic. And I'm not quite getting the thinking behind it. I mean, saving money, it just is not logical. We have no idea going forward, generations from now, how people are going to be using transportation. Mm. There might be cars that are absolutely environmentally neutral.
Yeah.
And that might be people's choice.
Let me get you an answer, Steve.
Yeah,
go ahead, Mayor.
Steve, look, he raised an important point. This is why, you know, this is, you know, when we talk about even with our budget, how we have to be strategic, but we also have to look towards the future. And this is, I mean, we're not eliminating all spots. We're just reducing the number of spots that would be required because it has increased rent. And so the challenge, Steve, is, and I'm just always going to be direct and straight up with the residents of this city, is that we have multiple challenges here, right? We have an affordability challenge that we have to work through. You know, in California and New York, the cost of rent averaged $4,200 to $4,500 a month. In Chicago, it's around $1,200, but we mm-hmm. have to do better, right? The average cost of a home, New York, Los Angeles, $800,000 to over $1 million. Average price of a home in Chicago is still around $350,000. In some places, you can get them less than that, right? So what my, I guess, effort is really designed to do is to ensure that we're building more units, that we are saving dollars with construction costs and rent. And one of the reasons why I wanted to highlight the fact that we do have four new L stops, people get to make choices, right? And if we're going to grow our city, we have to have a world-class public transportation system to be able to move people through. And, you know, the number of cars that still exist, it's what it is.
Yeah.
And you're right, Steve, we can't necessarily predict. However, we can build towards the future that encourages a more, I don't know, environmentally sound city, right? And that's the ultimate goal. But I hear you. I have friends who live up north. I don't have this issue as much because, you know, the way I move around the city, but I know how awful that is when you come home after a long day and you have to circle blocks for parking spots. Like, that's not lost to me. I know that Chicago experience. There's a reason why we have dibs, right?
Not fun at not all.
Not just because of, you know, shoveling, but because parking spots have been limited.
Right.
But it's going to be an ongoing process of how we find more creative ways to develop and grow our city.
Let's see how many more we can squeeze in the next 5 minutes.
Right.
Andy in Uptown is next. Hey, Andy, your question for the mayor.
Hi, Sasha. Thank you. And thank you, Mr. Mayor, for taking my question. Respect for you doing this. So my question is about homelessness, and I'm very encouraged to hear all the efforts that your administration is doing to address the issue. And it's an issue that I care a lot about. I honestly give a significant portion of my income to the Olive Branch Mission on the South Side, which is a wonderful charity if anyone's looking to support them. But in the meantime, living in Uptown, we've got homeless encampments in the park to the east of us and in the park just in my neighborhood to the west. And as someone who cares about the issue, I just don't see how that's at all a compassionate part of the solution. So why are we allowing those encampments to continue?
Well, thank you for your question and your conviction around this issue. This
quick
is important
answer
to
if
me.
You can give us one, Mayor.
First of all, we've increased the number of spending for the unhoused, right? So we increased the number of shelter beds by 126% just last month. I don't know if it was Andy was his name. We added $40 million to improve shelters. About seven of those shelters will receive those dollars. And we're continuing to work with DFSS to provide support for those individuals in those encampments. I'll just say this really quickly. There are a number of people who are in those encampments that that need a lot of support. And it's not as simple as just simply going into someone's encampment and saying, hey, come to this shelter. We have space for you. We have to restore confidence, because the shelter system in Chicago and really around the country have just been woefully underfunded, mm-hmm. and people have rejected them. So that's why we put more money into our shelters. The ultimate goal is to get people to stable housing. That work is ongoing. It is one of my top priorities. And the way to have a safe, affordable big city, you have to invest in housing. And yeah. that includes our shelter system. And we've done that. More work to be done. I'm going to need your help to help me pass a budget to increase our resources so that we can have more mental health support for some of these individuals, and then more non-congregant settings, because many of them said, we'll go into a shelter, but we don't want to be in an open space where everybody, it's not dignified, right?
Yeah, there's no privacy.
Exactly.
Among other
things. Was that quick enough?
Among other issues. That was quick. And to keep us moving here, Eilish and Avondale, I see you. I can't get to you, but I'm going to ask the mayor your question on your behalf. Eilish is asking about flooding in Chicago. What's Chicago's plan for extra stormwater?
Well, one of the things that we are doing now, we have just about completed the survey. The FEMA is here so that we can, you know, declare the necessary emergency to be able to get the additional funding. What we're doing now is we are literally going through our Department of Transportation to update and to transform our underground sewage system. It is over 100 years old. It's an arduous process. But we're committed to making those investments to do just that, to prevent flooding from happening. I live on the west side of Chicago. A lot of my neighbors experience that flooding on a regular basis. And it's something that from the federal government, as well as what we're doing locally to help support those families in the meantime, we have to really, really go after that infrastructure. And we're doing that.
In the last minute I have with you, you've talked about this. You've been in and out, out and about this week. You're meeting with and speaking with various groups. You're at that labor strike. You're talking about immigration. You were at a youth jobs event, just to name a few. Just the takeaway for us here, just as it comes to the current state of things in this city. What does it look like in your view? What can we hang on to?
Yeah, look, we're going to continue to show up for one another. You know, we have a president who has declared war on poor people versus war on poverty. And in order for us to build a safe, affordable big city, we have to invest in people. Just this week, we announced more neighborhood opportunity funds, and we showed up to Wagner Bakery and the Comer Youth Center, $250,000 for Comer, $100,000 for this small business on the southwest side of Chicago. There's another round of grants that are open now. It closes tomorrow. So if you are a small business and you need those resources, apply for the neighborhood opportunity funds. And then we're going to go into budget season. We're going to find ways in which we can cut and reduce unproductive government. Mm-hmm. But we don't have a spending problem. We have a revenue problem. In order for us to continue to see violence go down in the city of Chicago and more affordability take place, it's going to take all of us.
Yeah. We'll leave it there for this month. That's Mayor Brandon Johnson. Our big thanks to you for doing this. Appreciate you.
Thank you, Sasha.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Micah Yason, edited by Daniel Tucker, and mixed by Linnea Dominic. Reset's here to bring you into the conversation. So subscribe to this podcast and take Reset with you on the go. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thanks for listening. We'll meet again soon.